All right, let's dive right in today. As law students and future legal eagles, we often get kind of lost in the weeds of specific statutes and case law.
Absolutely, the nitty-gritty.
Right,
Yeah.
exactly, the nitty-gritty. But we sometimes miss those broader concepts that really shape how the legal system works. And today, we're tackling one of those big picture topics, and it's kind of a fascinating one. We're talking absolute immunity, but specifically for court-appointed mediators. And to really get our heads around this, we're going to zero in on a case that, well, it really set a precedent. It's Wagschull v. Foster. Have you heard of this one?
Oh, yeah, definitely. A cornerstone case, really, when you're talking about the kind of legal protections those folks have. The ones right in the middle of trying to help people resolve their disputes. I mean, think about it. You're a mediator, things get heated, somebody doesn't get their way, and boom, lawsuit.
Exactly. So to break this down for everybody listening, why should they care? Well, as future lawyers, you're almost guaranteed to bump into alternative dispute resolution,
Yeah.
right? Whether you're litigating, advising clients, or even just navigating your own personal disputes. So knowing the ins and outs of how ADR works, and especially understanding the what do they call it, the legal shields around the people running the show, well, it's crucial.
Couldn't agree more. Like, imagine you're a mediator trying to get two sides to see eye to eye, but in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, okay, what if this blows up? What if someone comes after me legally? Oh, I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Huge pressure, and probably not the best environment for getting people to, shake hands and compromise, right?
Not at all. You need that sense of security to be effective as a neutral party.
Okay, so before we get into the weeds of Wagschull v. Foster itself, just a quick overview of what we've got to work with today. So for this deep dive, we have the full case opinion. Obviously, we've also got a pretty detailed case brief. And then just to spice things up, we have this really interesting podcast guidance document that lays out some extra context.
Ooh, I love when we get those. It's like bonus insight.
I know, right? Always makes it more lively. So let's set the scene, shall we? We're in the hallowed halls of the DC Superior Court. Two guys, Mr. Wagschull and a Mr. Sheets, are locked in this property dispute. Fences, easements, the classic neighborly stuff.
Happens all the time.
All the time. So the court, probably wanting to save everyone some time and money, decides, all right, you two, mandatory mediation. It's non-binding, meaning whatever happens there isn't set in stone, but they got to try. Enter our mediator, Mr. Mark Foster, appointed by none other than Judge Levy to be the neutral case evaluator. But here's the thing, and this is where things get a little bit juicy, Wagschull. He's not exactly thrilled about this whole mediation thing. Like, he signs the ADR agreement, but he writes under protest right there on the document.
Oh, that's never a good sign. Talk about starting off on the wrong foot. You can practically feel the tension from
Oh,
here.
yeah. Like, imagine you're Foster walking into this situation. These guys are already kind of butting heads, and one of them is clearly not happy to even be there.
You gotta have some serious mediator skills to navigate that.
So in their initial meeting, Wagschull does what anyone who's feeling a little bit iffy about the neutrality of their mediator would do. He voices his concerns. He basically says, "Hey, Mr. Foster, I'm not so sure about your impartiality here."
Bold move.
Right. And Foster, to his credit, doesn't dismiss it. He steps back and recuses himself from the case. So you'd think, okay, mediation's over, right? But here's where it gets even more interesting. Foster, in a twist, suggests that the mediation should actually continue, even without him. Like, he genuinely believes these guys can hammer something out.
So he bows out gracefully, but still sees a path forward for them. So that's interesting. It's like he recognizes the value of the process itself, even if he's not the one steering the ship anymore.
Yeah, like, hey, maybe I'm not the right fit, but don't give up on this whole mediation thing. Fast forward a bit, June 1992 rolls around, and lo and behold, Wagschull and Sheets reach a settlement. All's well that ends well, right? Except not really.
Oh, there's a twist coming, isn't there?
A big one. Just a few months later, in September 1992, Wagschull files a lawsuit. But he doesn't sue Sheets, the guy he was in the property dispute with. Nope, he sues Mark Foster, the mediator who recused himself way back when.
Whoa, that escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Talk about holding a grudge. So, what was the basis of this lawsuit? What was Wagschull's beef with Foster after all this time?
Okay, so Wagschull's argument goes like this. He says that Foster, even in that short time he was involved, basically violated his fundamental right to due process. Like, things went down in those early mediation sessions that, according to Wagschull, tainted the whole process and somehow pushed him into this settlement that wasn't actually in his best interests.
So he's claiming that Foster's actions, or maybe even inactions, as the mediator, were so egregious that they essentially deprived him of a fair shot at resolving this dispute.
Exactly. And to make things even more complicated, Wagschull throws the whole legal kitchen sink at Foster. We're talking constitutional arguments based on the Fifth and Seventh Amendments, specifically the right to due process and the right to a trial by jury.
Okay, bringing in the big guns.
Big guns indeed. He also throws in a claim under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, which, for those who haven't memorized the entire U.S. code yet, allows you to sue for civil rights violations. And, just to top it off, he throws in a couple of local law claims like, you know, defamation, intentional infliction of emotional distress, that kind of stuff.
Wow. He really went all out. So basically, Wagschull is alleging that Foster's conduct as a court-appointed mediator was so far outside the bounds of what's acceptable that it caused him real harm, and he's entitled to some kind of legal remedy. This all boils down to a really crucial question for the legal system. Does absolute immunity protect court-appointed mediators from being sued?
Right. Like, does this concept of immunity, which we usually think of as protecting judges and certain other officials, extend to mediators who are, let's face it, playing a pretty crucial role in helping the courts resolve disputes?
Huge question for the world of ADR.
So what did the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals say? Did they side with Wagschull and say, yeah, mediators can be held liable for their actions? Or did they uphold this idea of absolute immunity? Drum roll, please.
Hit me with it.
They sided with Foster. The court held that, and this is the key takeaway here, court-appointed mediators, when they're doing their job, you know, performing those functions that are basically part and parcel of the judicial process, are absolutely immune from lawsuits. So, big win for mediators in this case.
Wow. So the court basically said, look, mediators are playing such a vital role in helping the courts function efficiently and fairly that we need to give them this strong legal protection.
Exactly. But they didn't just pull this decision out of thin air. They had a very specific rationale, three-part test, actually, to figure out if this quasi-judicial immunity, as they called it, should apply.
Three-part test. Gotta love them. It's how the legal world makes everything neat and tidy.
So organized. So the first part of the test focuses on something called functional similarity to judges. And this makes a lot of sense when you think about it. The court looked at what mediators actually do, like what their day-to-day tasks and responsibilities are, and they compared that to the role of a judge, especially in those pre-trial stages of a case.
Right, because a judge isn't just there to bang the gavel and issue rulings during a trial. There's a lot of work that goes into managing cases beforehand, trying to narrow down the issues, move things along, and sometimes even encourage the parties to settle.
Exactly. And mediators, in a lot of ways, do very similar things. They assess the facts of the case, they try to figure out what the key legal issues are, they help schedule meetings and manage the flow of information, and perhaps most importantly, they exercise a lot of discretion in guiding those settlement discussions.
Right. Like, a good mediator doesn't just sit there passively. They use their experience and expertise to help parties find common ground and explore potential solutions. That sounds a lot like what a judge does in pre-trial conferences and hearings, trying to get the case ready for trial or maybe even resolved without one.
It totally does. Mm-hmm. I remember that in the podcast guidance, it mentioned how Foster, in that brief time he was involved, was already working on identifying the potential legal issues that could make or break the case, and even started shaping expectations about how discovery would go. Those are definitely things a judge would be dealing with.
Absolutely. And it seems like the court's logic is this. If a mediator is performing tasks that are so closely aligned with what a judge does, especially when it comes to resolving disputes and ensuring a fair process, then they should be afforded a similar level of protection from lawsuits.
Makes sense. Okay, so that's the first pillar, the functional similarity to judges. What about the second one?
All right, pillar number two is all about the risk of harassment. The court recognized that if mediators were constantly worried about being sued by unhappy litigants, people who didn't get the outcome they wanted in mediation, it would seriously undermine the whole ADR system.
Yeah, like who would want to be a mediator if every time a case didn't settle perfectly, they were staring down the barrel of a lawsuit?
Exactly. And the court even said it pretty clearly in their opinion, quote, conduct of pretrial case evaluation and mediation is likely to inspire efforts by disappointed litigants to recoup their losses or harass the mediator in a second forum, end quote.
Wow. That is straight to the point.
Right. Like they're basically saying we can't have mediators constantly looking over their shoulders, afraid that someone's going to drag them into court because they didn't like the outcome.
Okay, so the court is clearly concerned about protecting mediators from these kinds of retaliatory lawsuits.
Yeah.
What's the third pillar of their reasoning?
The third pillar focuses on the existing safeguards within the legal system. They weren't saying that mediators should have free rein to do whatever they want with zero accountability. They pointed out that there are already mechanisms in place to address legitimate concerns about a mediator's conduct.
So it's not a complete free pass. There are checks and balances in the system.
Absolutely. For example, if a party thinks the mediator is biased, acting unethically, or overstepping their boundaries, they can go to the court and ask for that mediator to be disqualified.
Right. Like in Wagschul's case, he did raise concerns about Foster's neutrality right from the get-go, which is what led to Foster recusing himself. But he didn't stop there. He went and sued Foster separately. The court is basically saying, look, there are ways to deal with these problems within the existing system. You don't need to resort to a whole separate lawsuit against the mediator.
Right. Use the tools that are already there.
So if we sum up the court's rationale, they're essentially saying that because court-appointed mediators perform functions very similar to judges in helping to resolve disputes, they need protection from being sued so they can do their jobs effectively.
Right. Plus, there are already safeguards in place to handle any genuine concerns about a mediator's conduct.
But here's another really interesting thing, right? The immunity granted in Wagschul v. Foster isn't just any old immunity. It's what they call absolute immunity, and that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Absolute immunity is the top-tier protection. It's not like qualified immunity, which a lot of other government officials have. With qualified immunity, you're only protected if your actions were objectively reasonable.
Right. With absolute immunity, though, it's like you're wearing legal armor.
The strongest armor.
You're basically shielded from liability even if you make a mistake, even if you're negligent, heck, even if you do something intentionally wrong. And that might seem kind of crazy at first, like, wait, how can you be immune from consequences even if you mess up?
That's a natural reaction, for sure. But there's a method to the madness. The reasoning behind this level of protection is to protect the integrity and smooth functioning of the entire judicial system, especially when it comes to using ADR to resolve disputes quickly and fairly.
Yeah, it's all about making sure the system works as well as possible, even if it means giving mediators a lot of leeway.
It's like if judges and mediators were constantly worried about being sued for every decision they make, the whole system would grind to a halt.
Makes sense.
Mm.
But let's be clear about something super important here. This absolute immunity, as awesome as it sounds, doesn't mean mediators can just do whatever they want, right? It has limitations.
Totally. The key thing to remember is that this immunity only applies when the mediator is doing their job, acting within the scope of their official duties. Like, if a mediator goes rogue and starts offering legal advice or investing in one of the party's businesses, that's a whole different ballgame.
So stray outside of that official role, and you're potentially on your own.
Exactly. And it's also important to remember that this case specifically dealt with court-appointed mediators. The analysis might be completely different for private mediators who are hired directly by the parties without any involvement from the court. Their liability would likely hinge on different legal principles like contract law or maybe some kind of professional negligence standard.
Right. Apples and oranges.
Exactly.
So in the end, the appellate court in Wagschul v. Foster made it crystal clear. They upheld the lower court's decision to dismiss Wagschul's lawsuit against Foster. And this case has had a ripple effect, right? Like,
yeah.
It's become a major landmark case for how we view immunity in the context of ADR.
Absolutely. It's really solidified the legal protections for those who are helping courts resolve disputes through mediation. And that's a good thing for the system overall, because it encourages people to serve as mediators, knowing they have that legal backing.
Right. It's like, hey, we need you folks to help us manage this massive caseload. We're going to make sure you're protected while you're doing it.
Makes the whole system more efficient, too. If more cases can be resolved through mediation, it frees up the courts to handle those complex cases that really need a full-blown trial.
Exactly. Now, I know what some of you are thinking, because I'd be thinking it too. What if a mediator does something really shady? Like, what if they're blatantly biased or they engage in some kind of misconduct? Does this absolute immunity mean they're totally off the hook?
It's a valid question. Like, we want to make sure the system is fair and that people aren't being taken advantage of, right?
Absolutely. So how did the court address this?
They basically circled back to those existing safeguards we talked about earlier. Remember how parties can ask to have a mediator disqualified if they think something's fishy?
Right, like if the mediator seems to be favoring one side or isn't being impartial.
Exactly. The court is saying that these safeguards, while they might not be perfect, are an important part of making sure the system works. And look, it's not like absolute immunity means a mediator can never be held accountable for their actions. There could be other consequences, like professional discipline or even criminal charges in extreme cases.
So it's not a get out of jail free card.
Not at all.
Okay, so as we wrap this up, let's bring it back to our listeners. You, the future legal minds of America, what should you be taking away from this whole discussion about Wagshall v. Foster and absolute immunity for court-appointed mediators?
The bottom line is this. If you're appointed by a court to be a mediator and you're doing your job as the court expects, you've got some pretty strong legal protection. You're generally not going to be held liable for money damages just because one of the parties didn't like how things turned out.
So, the law is on your side as long as you're playing by the rules.
Precisely.
And I think that raises a really interesting question for all of you to ponder. This whole concept of absolute immunity, especially for folks who are supposed to be neutral in the legal process, it's a delicate balancing act, right? We're trying to make sure the system works efficiently, that disputes get resolved, but we also want to make sure individuals are protected and that there's some accountability.
It's a tough needle to thread.
It really is.
Yeah.
And as you move forward in your legal careers, I'd encourage you to keep thinking about these issues. Like, when might this absolute immunity be challenged? Where's that line between actions that are protected and those that might actually cross the line into misconduct? These are the kinds of questions that keep legal minds sharp.
Absolutely.
All right. On that note, thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, keep those legal minds engaged.
Always.
See you later.
Take care.